to go. And then I heard that another plane hit. And if you go over by there, you can see the people jumping out the window. They're jumping out the window right now. Oh my God. And if you go over by there, you can see the people jumping out the window. They're jumping out the window right now.
December 7, 1941, actually the next day that FDR said this is the day that they'll live in infamy. We are living through another day of infamy for this country.
Check this one. Fell through the restroom because she was there. We'll be right back.
human radio station.
I'm a little scared but excited at the same time.
I know you like two things I like. Chicken and chicks.
Freak socks.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this show's producer, WMFO, its staff and management, or Tufts University.
You had the power to be all good, all wise, and all powerful. Why would you make the world you had now?
I don't know. I was really drunk at the time.
I was not drunk. I was on pills.
My show, I can do whatever I want, so I am.
I want you to trip like I do.
And I saw people jumping out of, off the building. Many, many people just jumping. And in a panic, I had my bag and my cell phone and everything, and I was trying to find a phone because the cell phone wasn't working. Everybody was screaming. Everybody was running. The cops were trying to maintain the calm. And in that haste, people were stampeding. People started screaming that there was another plane coming. I didn't see the plane, but I turned around, and it just, the second building just exploded. And again, all the debris was flying towards us. There was a woman on the ground with her baby. People were stampeding the baby.
The government is increasing its power to watch you and diminishing your power to watch the government, and that is extraordinarily dangerous.
Get your own show. Play your own music.
Harmonious layers. Built up on top of one another. Like a sandwich.
Layering different sounds on top of each other. Layering different sounds on top of each other.
Computers can do that?
These were human beings.
Well, it started out down a dirty road. Started out all alone, and the sun went down as it crossed the hill, and the town lit up, the world got still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. The hardest thing. Well, the good old days may not return, and the rocks might melt, and the sea may burn. Thing.
who beat you down, break your heart, steal your crown. So it started out for God knows where. I guess I'll know when I get there. I'm learning to fly around the clouds. But what goes up must come down.
Hey!
Welcome to the Tears of the Gods sound collage. That's right, it's not just a radio show, it's a sound collage with audio clips from movies, TV shows, documentaries, political speeches, who knows where, mixed in between and on top of the music. And it's only here on WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Community and sometimes educational radio. I'm your host, Edward Buchert, and tonight we're commemorating the 15th anniversary of the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks and all the changes to the world that followed that. Yes, we've got a real sound collage for you that's drawing on many, many different sources, including a lecture by 9/11 truth seeker Dr. David Ray Griffin. He gave a talk at Boston University in 2009, and thanks to Chuck Yu and Jeff Manzelli for originally recording that and getting that to me. And, well, Dr. Griffin is a retired professor of philosophy of religion and theology, and he's a prolific author, most notably on the subject of the September 11th attacks. And, well, some people would call him a 9/11 conspiracy theorist, but he would counter that he's a 9/11 truth seeker. And as he points out a little bit later when we hear from him, a conspiracy is, by definition, two or more people working together to commit a crime. And the official U.S. government report on 9/11 says that there were 19 hijackers who committed those crimes. So even in the official report, there certainly was at least one conspiracy. The question is, were there any others? You know, if you watch television, I haven't watched TV in many years, but the TV show 24, the idea of a company like Blackwater or Academia, as they now call themselves, a private military contractor that was, well, famous in many cases. In 2007, a group of its employees killed 17 Iraqi civilians and injured 20 more in Nisour Square in Baghdad. And, well, four of them were convicted in U.S. courts of that crime. But in any case, you know, the idea of a somebody like Blackwater or some people with vested interests in particular military and political objectives, they could have found out about what the hijackers were doing and helping them along a little bit in order to drum up business. That's just 10% of a television story. And, well, 9/11 certainly dramatically changed the world. And even in the best case, you can say that the United States was caught unprepared by a genius tactic and then went overboard on this new threat with all of the reactions that we had, like invading Iraq, which we now know was certainly not at all responsible in any way for the 9/11 attacks. Well, in any case, we started off the show with a crazy intro for a crazy sound collage this evening. The Cult, Love Removal Machine. And that was the version, kind of raw version, I got off of the Rare Cult Disc 3. And Rare Cult's this box collection of a whole bunch of alternate and unreleased versions. And, well, there's Love Removal Machine versions on Disc 2 or Disc 5, but this was the one on Disc 3. My favorite. And we also heard in that intro Tom Petty and Learning to Fly. and AC/DC and the atomic remix of War Machine. And yeah, a little bit of a crazy intro. Usually I just have an excerpt of Love Removal Machine, but we played the whole version in our extended intro this evening. And, you know, there's that one clip of a woman talking about seeing the people jumping off the World Trade Center towers. If you go over there right now, you'll see them jumping. And that's just one of the scariest audio clips that I've ever come across. But, yeah, it makes the hair on the back of my neck just stand up and almost makes me cry just hearing about it. So during the rest of our show, we're going to be hearing extensively from our featured band, the seminal German electronic ensemble, Tangerine Dream. But most importantly, you're going to be hearing a lot of those audio clips from who knows where that we pack into a sound collage as part of our historical view of things tonight. Specifically from news reporters and politicians and preachers, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, and the actual witnesses. And I'm also going to be mixing up some commentary from longtime WMFO Promethean Commentary Plus jazz host Hank Fonts, and also some Dwight David Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, from his farewell speech to the nation in 1961, warning about the dangers of the military-industrial complex that, yes, he helped create, but, you know, he was so right in his warning, and after 9/11 is just an absolute another example of how right he was in predicting, warning what was going to happen. So we're going to start off a very long set. Actually, the structure of tonight's show is we've got, I think, just three sets for you. And the next set, where we're going to be hearing a lot of Tangerine Dream, beginning with Stratosphere, the title track from that album. And the recordings that I'm going to start mixing off in this are actually from the cockpit of Flight 93. After it was hijacked. Yes, that's in the mix coming up. So get ready, strap in your seatbelt, and enjoy, well, experience what I hope is a wild and thought-provoking experience here for you on this Tears of the God sound collage, remembering 9/11.
Lecture is called 9/11, Time for a Second Look. suggesting that it is time for people to take a second look at 9/11. I primarily have in mind people who decided long ago that the attacks of 9/11 happened essentially the way the Bush administration and the official reports said they happened, and who therefore decided that the so-called 9/11 truth movement, which disputes that account, is composed of crazy conspiracy theorists with no capacity to evaluate evidence objectively. Having formed those views long ago, such people, including most journalists, have been impervious to any arguments presented by the 9/11 truth movement. They simply roll their eyes and move on. However, both the truth movement and the available evidence have changed dramatically in the past 3 years. Because of these changes, it is not rational to reject the claims of the movement out of hand without taking a second look. If you are a person who has had such an attitude, you cannot, in the face of these changes, simply roll your eyes without exhibiting the very irrationality with which you charge those whom you have called conspiracy theorists. My lecture is also addressed, albeit indirectly, to fellow members of the truth movement. Some members have decided now that Bush and Cheney are out of office, and the Obama administration has reversed some of their 9/11-based policies, that getting the truth about 9/11 exposed is not so important anymore. Other members of the movement, seeing that the Obama administration still presupposes that Al-Qaeda attacked America on 9/11, have concluded that there is no hope that the truth will ever come out. So we might as well give up. To such people, I suggest that getting the truth revealed is just as important as it ever was. Because many 9/11-based policies, especially the war in Afghanistan, have not been reversed. I also suggest that because of the changes in the political landscape, combined with developments in the 9/11 truth movement, we now have, really for the first time, a realistic chance of getting a real investigation. I turn now to my topic, why official conspiracy theorists should take a look, a second look, at 9/11. I use the term official conspiracy theorists advisedly. Quite often, people who believe the official theory about 9/11 speak contemptuously of members of the 9/11 truth movement as conspiracy theorists. But this is irrational. A conspiracy occurs whenever two or more people plan in secret to do something illegal, such as rob a bank or defraud a corporation's customers. To hold a conspiracy theory about some event is simply to believe that it came about because of some conspiracy. According to the Bush-Cheney interpretation of 9/11, which became the official account, the attacks resulted from a conspiracy between Osama bin Laden and 19 young members of Al-Qaeda. The official account is therefore a conspiracy theory, and in fact was the original conspiracy theory about 9/11. What this means is that everyone holds a conspiracy theory about 9/11. Debate about 9/11 is therefore not a debate between conspiracy theorists and people who reject conspiracy theories. It is simply between a debate between those who accept the official Bush-Cheney interpretation of 9/11, their conspiracy theory, and those who accept the alternative theory, according to which 9/11 resulted from a conspiracy within the Bush-Cheney administration. Those who believe the official conspiracy theory, therefore, cannot rationally reject the alternative theory on the grounds that it is a conspiracy theory. To be rational, they must ask, which conspiracy theory is better supported by the relevant facts? Appreciate applause or laughter because it gives the speaker a chance to get a drink. Let me make clear that I do not use the term official conspiracy theorist as a term of reproach. There's nothing wrong with accepting the official conspiracy theory. I did myself for a year and a half. It is only a problem if you are a true believer, meaning that you are so certain that the Bush-Cheney interpretation is correct that you refuse to look at any evidence that might suggest otherwise. One reason why it is irrational to keep believing the Bush-Cheney interpretation of 9/11 without being willing to look at possibly contradictory evidence is that there now exists grounds for being skeptical of this theory that did not exist at the time that it became imprinted on most minds.
Just making it up as you go along.
What a great crowd. At that time, for example, it was not known that the Bush-Cheney administration would tell enormous lies that would lead to millions of deaths, including thousands of American deaths. Besides the lies about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the White House, after 9/11, ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to lie about the air at the World Trade Center site, saying that it was safe to breathe. They knew otherwise. 2 days before, in fact, the Boston Globe had a story reporting that the air had very high levels of asbestos and other dangerous particles. Nevertheless, and the EPA was going to say this. The Bush-Cheney White House ordered them to change their statement and tell people the air is safe to breathe. As a result, rescue workers and cleanup workers went out there without even a flimsy cotton mask on, many of them. And as a result, now about 60% of those workers are ill. And if they have not died already, the prediction by many people is that more people will die from the rescue and cleanup than died on 9/11 itself. In the face of this information, it would be difficult to claim that the Bush-Cheney administration would have been morally incapable of orchestrating 9/11 and the subsequent cover-up. We also now have reasons, not widely known at the time, to be skeptical of the official reports. Most people have assumed that the 9/11 Commission was run by its co-chairman, former New Jersey Governor, Republican Thomas Kane, and former Democratic Congressman Lee Hamilton. They have thought of it, therefore, as an independent, nonpartisan commission. But the 9/11 Commission was actually run by Philip Zelikow. He controlled the 85-person staff which did all the work. And he was in charge of producing the 9/11 Commission report. And yet he was essentially a member of the Bush-Cheney White House. He had worked with Condoleezza Rice during the administration of the first President Bush on the National Security Council. Then during the Clinton years, Rice and Zelikow wrote a book together. Then when she became appointed National Security Advisor under the second President Bush, she brought Zelikow back to help with the transition to the new National Security Council. And then, most important, when she had the job of producing National Security Strategy of the United States of America for 2002, she brought on Zelikow to write it. There had been a first draft produced by a person in the State Department, but she said it wasn't bold enough, so she brought on Zelikow. Zelikow produced an extremely bold, even belligerent document, which said, now that 9/11 has happened, we can no longer honor international law as traditionally understood. According to international law, no country is allowed to attack another country unless it knows that an attack from it is imminent, too imminent to take the matter to the Security Council of the United Nations. Zelikow said, no, now that 9/11 has happened, we cannot wait. So we must have the right to attack other countries before they are ready to attack us. This was a new radical doctrine of preemptive preventive warfare, which Dick Cheney and other neocons had long wanted. And yet, Philip Zelikow was then put in charge of the 9/11 Commission, which should have been asking, among other things, the question, might the Bush administration have a motive for orchestrating or at least allowing 9/11?
The reason we were attacked, the reason these people are dead, these people are missing and dead, and they weren't doing anything wrong. They were living their lives. They were going to work. They were traveling. They were doing what they normally do. As I understand it, and my understanding of this is dated best, another smaller group of people stole some airplanes and crashed them into buildings. And we're told that they were zealots fueled by religious fervor. And if you live to be 1,000 years old, will that make any sense to you? Will that make any goddamn sense?
Nothing new, but this is altogether more flagrant than most of these issues. Well, you can take way back in World War One. I remember once, oh, a good many years ago, when I was a lad of 23 or 4, 25, I guess. I was in the library of my hometown, and I found a book that went way back, even then, back to just after World War One, and it had it all itemized, and it said, the money that was spent on World War One, which was, by today's standards, was far less, because don't forget, a dollar now is worth 10, 15 times as much as it was back then. But it doesn't go very far, as we all know. However, what I'm trying to say is you can multiply this by 10 or 15%, but it said for the amount of money spent on World War One, they could have given a free college education to everybody in the country 4 years through. And that's just part of it. They could also have given, at that time, an average house cost $5,000. Yeah. But multiply that by how much it would cost now, even more so than housing. But the point I'm giving is, and that they would have given a $5,000 house, which was what an average house cost them, to every person in the country. Every family in the country, I should say. Well, I don't know, a million other things such as that. But now this is something that came out way back, oh, maybe 80 years ago. It was known then. The people who want to know about it, people intelligent, who are intelligent and willing to
also
look at truth, true things, you know.
More recently,
find the
New York Times,
goes on. Why work for us? Because production is not for use, it's for profit, the profit of the few.
More things about Zelikow.
The capitalists. The
we learned that in spite of his promises to the contrary, he remained in contact
just
with
like
Condoleezza Rice.
And
also with Karl Rove, the ultimate political operator in the White House, who was intensely interested in the 9/11 Commission, fearing that it might say something that would cost them the re-election. Also, Sheenan revealed that before the staff had its first meeting, before any research had been done, he had written an outline of the final report. Complete, Sheenan says, with chapter headings, subheadings, and sub-subheadings. Sheenan also revealed that Kane and Hamilton conspired with Zelikow to keep the existence of this outline a secret from the staff.
Most of these issues.
In a book they wrote about the 9/11 Commission, Kane and Hamilton criticized conspiracy theorists because rather than forming their theories on the basis of facts, they start with their theories and then look for facts or perhaps fabricate facts to support their theories. By contrast, Kane and Hamilton said, the 9/11 Commission started with the relevant facts, not with a conclusion. We were not setting out to advocate one theory or interpretation of 9/11 versus another, they said. And yet, they admitted. Zelikow assigned the subject of Al-Qaeda to one of the staff's teams, which was told to tell the story of Al-Qaeda's most successful operation,
now,
the 9/11 attacks. If that is not starting with a theory, what would be? The 9/11 Commission was not independent of the Houston in the White House. What about the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which was given the task of preparing the official report about the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers,
and Building 7?
NIST is an agency of the Department of Commerce. And therefore, during all the years it was working on these reports, it was an agency of the Bush-Cheney administration, run by an appointee of that administration. Recently, a former employee of NIST has spoken out, saying that NIST had been fully hijacked from the scientific into the political realm. Scientists working for NIST, he says, lost their scientific independence and became little more than
hijacked. Oh, we saw smoke coming out. Everybody started
everything
coming out.
Everything that came
the
from
plane
the higher
the
guns
side of the building, and there was smoke
was
everywhere. People jumping out the windows.
Through the sound
oh, they didn't open out the windows. I guess
for political implications before release.
This
reports on the World Trade Center also had to be approved by the National Security Agency
and the
Office of Management and Budget,
an
arm of the Executive Office of the President, which had a policy person specifically delegated to provide oversight on our work. As a result, NIST reports would say the Twin Towers in Building 7 came down without the aid of explosives, are political, not scientific documents.
God will not
as any serious examination of these reports will reveal. The authors with their PhDs in physics and engineering could not possibly believe the things they have written. If reasons to take a second look
at 9/11 are provided by new information about the Bush-Cheney administration and the official reports supporting its conspiracy theory. The same is true of the new shape of the 9/11 truth movement.
The ACLU's got to take a lot
one
of blame
time
for this.
It was dismissed.
And I know I'll hear from them for this, but throwing God off successfully with the help of the federal court system.
And it was dismissed as a bunch of kids on the internet
square,
and
out of
an
the
aging
schools.
Theologian. George Monbiot, writing in The Guardian, referred to members of the movement as morons and idiots. Alexander Coburn, writing in Counterpunch, The Nation, and Le Monde Diplomatique, referred to the movement's members as the 9/11 conspiracy nuts, saying they know nothing about the real world, especially the world of military affairs. Lacking any conception of evidence, he added, they represent the ascendancy of magic over common sense and reason. Insofar as critics of the 9/11 movement could, by ignoring many of the early members of the movement, such as a former police officer, a world-class economics professor in Canada, a commercial pilot who had flown 757s and 767s, and an acute historian and many others, by ignoring all those, they could portray me as the head of this movement. Monbiot referred to me as its high priest. Another left-wing critic called me its guru. So they could somewhat plausibly present the 9/11 movement as a religious movement comprised of people who knew nothing about the real world. As one critic put it, Griffin, being a theologian, is not qualified to talk about anything but myths and fairy tales. I did reply that if that's true, I should be eminently qualified to talk about the official conspiracy theory.
They could have given a free college education to everybody in the country 4 years through.
Nevertheless, the 9/11 truth movement can be easily dismissed insofar as people retain an image of it that was formed several years ago, when it could be portrayed as led by people who have no expertise in the relevant fields. Even if that caricature, like most caricatures, contained a grain of truth, then it is now completely false. The intellectual leadership of the 9/11 truth movement is now exercised by scientists and other professionals who definitely know something about the real world. Many of these professionals have formed organizations dedicated to discovering and publicizing the truth about 9/11. A few years ago, some scientists formed the SPINE, the Scientific Panel for the Investigation of 9/11. Other scientists more recently formed Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice, the main work of which has been carried out by physicists and chemists. Shortly thereafter, detractors of the truth movement said that if there were any validity to the claims these scientists make about the World Trade Center, they would be able to get papers published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. Over the past year, scientists affiliated with Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice have published 3 papers in peer-reviewed scientific journals. The lead author of the most recent of these papers, which appeared in the Open Chemical Physics Journal, is Niels Herit, a professor of chemistry at the University of Copenhagen. These scientists, who know something about the chemical constituents of the real world, report finding many elements in the World Trade Center dust that should not be there if the official theory, according to which these buildings came down solely because of fire and gravitation, if that were true. A few years ago, after some physicists and chemists had joined the movement, detractors said, they don't really count. The question of what brought down the World Trade Center buildings is a question for engineers, and your movement doesn't have any. This was in 2005, and that was true. The following year, by the way, some of you heard that interview I did on Democracy Now when Amy Goodman brought in a hitman, and this became the point of issue at the end of the interview, that he said, you don't have any engineers. Now, it was true. It was the case that I had located one in Mexico, and I had contacted him and tried to get him to speak out.
The ACLU's got to take a lot of blame for this, and I know I'll hear from them for this, but throwing God off successfully with the help of the federal court system, throwing God out of the public square, out of the schools.
Well, the following year,
I really believe that the gays and the lesbians helped this happen.
Architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. And
God will not be mocked.
As of today, over 600 licensed architects and engineers have signed a petition saying the official story cannot be true. We need a new investigation.
God will not be mocked.
These are people who know something about that part of the world that consists of steel frame high-rise buildings. And they know that the official story, according to which fires caused the Twin Towers and buildings to come down in virtual free fall, simply cannot be true. For example, Jack Keller, emeritus professor of engineering at Utah State University, who had been given special recognition by Scientific America, has said about the collapse of Building 7, obviously it was the result of controlled demolition. A similar judgment has been offered by two emeritus professors of structural engineering at Switzerland's most prestigious institute, the Federal Institute of Technology, along with hundreds of other engineers and architects that belong to Gage's organization. Firefighters also have expert knowledge that is relevant to what happened in New York City on 9/11. And this past year brought the formation of Firefighters for 9/11 Truth, who point out on the basis of their professional expertise why the NIST reports about the World Trade Center should not be believed. As you know, thanks to Alphonse being here, there is also an organization called Veterans for 9/11 Truth, which which contains several former military officers. They, I would venture to say, probably know a little more about the world of military affairs than Alexander Coburn. Another professional organization with relevant expertise is Pilots for 9/11 Truth, which includes in its ranks many former commercial and military pilots, including some interceptor pilots, who call incredible the official story about why the 9/11 airliners were not intercepted. This organization has also devoted special attention to the attack on the Pentagon, giving numerous reasons why the official account of that attack simply cannot be true. We'll be right back.
I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about
cutting and burning.
I'd probably talk about
cutting and burning.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school.
Cutting and burning.
Clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
Just listen and be supportive.
Probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to